Continuing with Keith Lowe, Savage Continent, Europe in the Aftermath of World War II. The Soviet Solution. When the Soviets reinvaded Ukraine and Poland in 1944 and discovered the extent of the ethnic conflict there, they were alarmed. They certainly couldn't allow such chaos to disrupt their supply lines while the war was still going on. And since the UPA, remember the fascist organization in the Ukraine, and since the UPA had also begun to attack Soviet formations, something had to be done to stabilize the situation. Their solution was simple. If the different nationalities could not be made to live together peacefully on the same territory, then they should be separated. Now, what follows is a very long interjection. I'm going to be drawing on a bunch of other folk taking Keith Lowe's advice and trying to see from the vantage of the whole. 1944, the war was almost ending. Think assessment for next steps and cleanup operations and pressing your advantages and stage setting in a revamped theater. What did we learn from Miklos is the first thought of power in transition. Cover your ass with unsavory fact suppression and by establishing a plausible invention. Once the writing was on the wall, the German state tried to wipe out all trace of its true motives, categorization, segregation, containment, and extermination. And what I meant to add there as well, given this quote from Hitler we're going to be reading in a minute, the new order for the world. Order. That word statesmen are so fond of. Now, after all we've been shown of Power's M.O., along the lines of divide and control, are we still unwilling to see that power is power is power across the class ages, across the class ideologies, be it communist, socialist, or democratic? We got some beeping going on. I hope it ain't too obvious. I hope it doesn't come across over the microphone. Thank you. Power is power is power across the class ages, across the class ideologies, be it communist, socialist, or democratic. And that given that uniformity of priorities, very little need be said amongst themselves, these global state statesmen, about their underlying motives. Much agreement is tacit. Kissinger puts it like this, quote, "International orders that have been the most stable have had the advantage of uniform perception." I'm applying that line to the goal of every totalitarian, including Kissinger himself. Eliminate all, and including Plato, right? That was their teacher. Eliminate all alternative ways of thinking. International orders that have been the most stable have had the advantage of uniform perceptions. The statesmen who operated the 18th century European order were aristocrats who interpreted intangibles like honor and duty in the same way and agreed on fundamentals. They represented a single elite society that spoke the same language, French, frequented the same salons, and pursued romantic liaisons in each other's capitals. National interests, of course, varied, but in a world where a foreign minister could serve a monarch of another nationality, for instance, every Russian foreign minister until 1820 was recruited abroad, or when a territory could change its national affiliation as the result of a marriage pact or a fortuitous inheritance. A sense of overarching common purpose was inherent. Power calculations in the 18th century took place against this ameliorating background of a shared sense of legitimacy and unspoken rules of international conduct, unquote, from World Order. Now, it is very clear in Kissinger's, when you read this book, that this is exactly what power wants again, that level of uniformity of perception. And let's throw this into the mix. Quote, this is from Kevin Phillips, American Dynasty, Aristocracy, Fortune, and the Politics of Deceit in the House of Bush. Quote, in his post-war book, Germany's Underground, Alan Dulles sought to portray his stable of Third Reich contacts in a better light. Relatively few had dissented from Hitler's early objectives, reoccupying the Rhineland, annexing Austria, or carving up Czechoslovakia or Poland. So they weren't Western type moderates. What they did represent, however, were information come secret negotiation channels and fault lines in a less than monolithic Germany. Besides the old line, aristocrats, military officers, and diplomats, products of the Kaiser's Germany, not Hitler's, some of whom proved open to exchanges or the possibilities of negotiated peace or anti-Soviet alliances. Others represented different economic and cultural fault lines. Financiers with Western European and North American exposures like Jean-Marc Schacht, Baron Kurt von Schroeder, and others were not entirely trusted by Hitler. Many of the Germans who ran IG Farben or the high-powered German subsidiaries of U.S. firms like Ford, General Motors, ITT, General Electric, and Standard Oil contributed to a Kepler leadership circle that funded SS Chief Himmler and his resident schemer cum intelligence chief, Walter Schellenberg. Although the moral distinction between Hitler and Himmler was negligible, the latter kept up an off and on indirect dialogue with Alan Dulles and M16 about the separate peace that might be possible in U.S. eyes only if another German regime replaced Hitler, unquote from Kevin Phillips, American Dynasty.